Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. We have a future focus on tap this hour. Here's the question. Where will television head thanks to smart sets and connected devices you power up by voice? Both of our guests will address this question, starting with former CNN president John Klein. He's now at B-Link, engaged with artificial intelligence. Klein and the company's product vice president, Bill DePera, join me next. For our second half hour, we'll have observations from media consultant David Tice, the author of the brand new book, The Genius Box. Also ahead, AFB reaches for 30, and our classic trivia question of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in this hour. 55 degrees at the top of this hour, and we welcome you on this Monday afternoon, brand new week, for the program All About Television. Great to have you aboard, wherever you're catching us across the country, around the globe. Got some wonderful guests for you happening in the next 60 minutes, and we invite you, as always, to be part of the conversation. We think it's going to be a thought-provoking one. So pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Another way you can get involved is our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So whether you use the phone or the room, we will hear you and we'll get you involved. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon somewhere on your Blog Talk or Spreaker screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Our pair from B-Links will join me here in New York after these news notes. ABC will keep America's Funniest Home Videos on its primetime lineup through 2021 under an extended agreement. AFB will reach 30 seasons in first-run production, making the Clip series ABC's longest-running entertainment offering. The extension includes development of a separate Videos After Dark series featuring more adult-oriented material. Original AFB host Bob Saget will come back for the same role on After Dark and co-executive produce with AFB originator Vin DeBona, who was on this program several months ago. After Dark is expected to debut on ABC next year. Now for today's reboot item, While You're Out, the home makeover attraction running from 2002 to 2006 on TLC. The network plans to launch both a new version of Wild and a separate version for Sister Discovery Inc. channel Home and Garden Television, HGTV. And that is news notes for today. From the start, this program has been fascinated by two things, where television's at and where this medium is going. And the second half, where it's going, is what we're going to talk about today. And we're doing so what we think is a critical time for the world of television. Why? Because of two developments. The first is smart television sets and TV-connected devices like Amazon Fire TV, Google Chromecast, TouchJet Wave, Roku, etc., reaching critical mass, as in two-thirds of all U.S. households, maybe, according to some statistics, as many as three-quarters of all U.S. households. They're using these sets and devices at the rate of 1 to 4 hours a day, every day of the week and the month, and it's growing. And you can make the argument that this is how people are watching Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, Sony Crackle, CBS All Access, a whole bunch of services, and while you're seeing action for new services next year from the likes of Apple, Walmart, Costco, WarnerMedia, and Disney. But now we have development number two. A fast-growing number of these sets of devices now have artificial intelligence-powered voice features built in. We're talking Google Assistant, Alexa, Siri, Bixby, and others, which allow you to control the set, how you watch it, how you use it with your voice. You don't have to use an Amazon Echo or a separate sound speaker that you place in your bedroom or living room next to your bed or table or sofa, whatever. You can talk directly to the television set. And what we want to know is this the beginning, at long last, of something people predicted for decades, an era of interactive content, interactive advertising, and interactive merchandising? And that's what we're going to address as the main question throughout this hour. And addressing it first are two people who are now involved in a venture that started a couple months ago called B-Links. And the first up, the former president of CNN, who is now presiding over this company, which proud to welcome this program for the very first time, John Klein. John, welcome in.
Simon, thank you very much. It's great to be here. I'm a big fan.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you so much. And joining both of us is the Product Vice President at V-Link, Phil Zapera. Hello, Phil.
Hey, Simon. Good to be here.
Same with you. So I'll start with you. Do you think we're at the beginning of an era of interactive television because of artificial intelligence?
Oh, yeah. You know, and I think that the voice activation part of it is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, the where this is all going is that the discovery of content that you most want to watch is going to become more intuitive and more fluid. It's going to become as easy as talking to yourself. You know, when you pick up a remote, you already know what you want to watch. Just like when you open the refrigerator for a snack, you don't have to ask anybody what it is you want to eat. You just know. And pretty soon, Alexa and Siri and the others are just going to know what you feel like at different times of the day. And that will be really good. You won't believe that you used to have to ask Alexa to play a specific show. They're just going to be there, and they'll anticipate what it is you want. And that is all driven by AI, which is able to see patterns in media usage that mere humans just can't.
Well, welcome guest 1016 into our chat room. Simon Apple04 by name. Thanks for coming aboard. If you have a question or comment for our guest, put it in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. Bill, from what you and John and the rest of your company are accumulating information, how fast are we, the public, getting into this idea of addressing the television set with our voice, saying everything from Siri, order me an Uber ride, or order me Domino's Pizza, or tickets from StubHub or something from Grubhub, or change direction of the show from blank to blank?
You know, I think it's starting to happen, and, you know, it's coming in some of the, you know, like the X1 boxes and things like this that already support voice, but it's slowly starting to happen, and I know that it's still, for many people, it is kind of an awkward thing to use your voice as an interface. But I do believe, you know, with things like Siri and all these things, it has started to happen and has started to happen, you know, in a broad way. So it's definitely here. Now it's just a matter of, you know, like John mentioned, that's really the interface, getting comfortable with that, but then really leveraging that to do a lot of really powerful things under the hood.
John, how fast do you see this environment evolve? We know that not only do we have a fair number of these sets and devices with already AI, but we understand that every television set, every one of these devices, no matter which, where it comes from, whether from Amazon or Google or whoever, or Apple or whoever, that they're all going to have a or one or more of these features. That we just heard that Roku is going to have Google Assistant. That they're bringing that aboard, that these features are going to be mandatory for every television set and device that's coming on from here to eternity.
Yeah, I think that the only friction in the line is going to be the physical production process. The consumer demand is going to grow exponentially because we've seen this happen with all the new technological developments over the last 10, 20 years. It just the speed at which consumers now understand the benefits and demand them is growing exponentially, and it's really just going to be a matter of how quickly the manufacturers can grab hold of them. Remember, the smart TVs had a sort of a slow ramp up as well. There was a period just about 5 years ago, you know, Barry Diller was saying, listen, I'm not so sure it's important to be on smart TVs because they only represent about 16% of the market, and now they represent the dominant part of the television set market. And so I think you're going to see the same thing happen with AI embedding because consumers are going to like the experience better. It's just going to be easier to find the shows that you want. You know, there's so much content now to have to wade through that consumers they see it as a burden, you know, because most of that content is not what they want. Even if it's high quality, it's by definition not going to satisfy their particular focus or their particular appetite, even if it, you know, fulfills the appetites of everybody else who's watching or a huge number of other viewers. So consumers will demand it and manufacturers will just have to figure out a supply chain methodology to deliver it.
Jill, how sophisticated are these features getting and how quickly is the TV world going to have to adapt to incorporating them into their programming, into series, into TV production, and among the retailers in the merchandising.
This stuff is getting super sophisticated. I mean, and you see it already now and on the web, but, you know, around content personalization, around analytics, around just insight into understanding your content, all of these things are getting very sophisticated because of all the advancements in the last few years, especially around AI. You look at a company like, you know, like a Netflix, right? And like these companies, Netflix, the Googles, and they all are where they are because of their discipline around not just data, but also the analysis of data and leveraging artificial intelligence to actually get insights out of that, to make products built on top of this. So it's becoming incredibly sophisticated, and, you know, the television world is definitely, you know, starting to catch on, and it's going to have to happen pretty quickly, I think, in terms of kind of really integrating this at the next level in smart TVs and things like this, because, I mean, there's just so much potential there. And I don't think that it's really that much in the way right now that would allow you to tap into that potential on the smart TV side.
We're talking a big future of television, a future that could be powered by your voice matching up with artificial intelligence voice features delivered through the television set or connected device, the likes of Siri, Google Alexa, and Google Assistant, excuse me, and Alexa. We're talking to two people who are in the thick of this whole situation, former CNN President John Klein and Bill Zepeda. Klein is president. Paul Zepeda is product vice president of a new company called VLinx that was started several months ago. And they're both joining me live here in New York this half hour, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from the Big Apple, 55 degrees, top of the hour. Be involved in the conversation. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 049, just 1016 already in the room. Friday on Smart Be Televised, we're celebrating a birthday. The birthday of Mickey Mouse. That's what ABC will do this Sunday night with Mickey's 90th Spectacular. And executive producer Charlie Haeckel will be my lead guest. Then, what if you are trying to buy a house and you want to do it without setting foot in the house first? That's what six couples are going to be doing on a new Bravo series premiering soon called Buying It Blind. We will have the three people who will help those folks get going, and was one of the executive producers as well. And finally, we will have a brand new event happening here in New York on Friday night and Saturday, the first ever New York City Television Festival. 13 new series pilots, including one produced in Russia with the Bolshoi Ballet, another from Iceland, the rest from the United States. They will get their premiere and maybe their first step to becoming series. We'll talk to the organizer of this brand new event, Roberto Rizzo. He is joining us live a few hours before a reception and the first night of this festival. That's Roberto Rizzo, and he'll join us live right here, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, on Tomorrow We Televise. John, in recent weeks, we have heard that Netflix wants to put together a series of Choose Your Own Adventure programs. They've been experimenting with some kids' show episodes. Now there's talk that they're going to maybe do a whole lineup of these shows besides maybe special episodes with this Choose Your Adventure idea from a show like Stranger Things or Black Mirror. Walmart's made a $250 million investment in an interactive venture called Echo, which has Samsung and MGM also as investors. They may make that an interactive television program. And we're hearing other things, too. And I'm wondering what you think about these ventures and the idea of artificial intelligence playing a role.
Well, it's really smart for any company to be attuned to what large portions of their audience want to do. And I'm sure that a lot of the interest in that kind of interactive programming is driven by the massively multiplayer games like Fortnite, et cetera, which are proving that a large chunk of the audience sees involvement as being central to the entertainment experience. That entertainment is not simply a sit-back experience, but it's something in which you, the user, plays an active role. And that's not going to be for everyone, but it's going to be for a lot of people, and they're smart to jump in there and investigate it. And of course, AI plays a hugely powerful role in powering that sort of thing, because you're given so much additional insight when you're deploying machine learning and artificial intelligence. you understand your content better, and you understand how your audience is using that content better, and you are discovering multiple audiences within your general audience, and you are unearthing new genre within those. You know, Netflix likes to talk about having discovered 2,000 plus different genres that they didn't know existed before. And those genres are purely driven by how audiences interact with different kinds of content in ways that you might not have expected. So the viewers of a certain horror movie might, for some strange reason, also love a particular comedy. And they begin to see those patterns and can start to program to them so that pretty soon after you've joined up with Netflix, they can pigeonhole you as one of those 2,000 genre members and start to push recommendations at you accordingly. That is all driven by AI, the ability to look at behaviors and see patterns that a regular human could not. So for these sort of interactive entertainments, it's going to be very important to understand who the natural audiences are and be able to program and, especially important, market to them.
So one concern I have heard from some people who are excited about what AI can do for television is that if you use AI and you use it in a particular way over and over and over again to get something, you develop a habit. So let's say you change your habit. Let's say you decide one day I'm going to change from buying a Thick Guard soap to Irish Spring soap, that the AI is going to keep thinking like you have Safeguard. And it will take a while for the feature, to realize, hey, the habit's changed. What do you think of that concern? Is that a fair concern, or is that something that AI is going to prove that it really isn't much?
Yeah, I don't think it is, to be honest, because, I mean, a lot of ways that's just part of how you architect your recommendation system. And one thing that we've seen in particular is that what you do most recently is really one of the largest indicators in what we should recommend to you, right? So even if, I mean, you have to look at multiple factors to create a, you know, recommendation profile for somebody, many different behaviors, but also over time. So yes, you might have a profile that says, okay, somebody likes X, and they have for a while, but it's really about how well, how intelligently you, and how able to adapt your recommendation system is built. So you really should be looking at what you do in the short term versus the long term, and use that as a major weight in your recommendation algorithms. So I don't think that is honestly that big of a concern.
John, let's get into your company. What is V-Links out to do?
Well, you know, when you look at the landscape, Netflix and Amazon have stolen a march on traditional media companies because they started integrating AI way ahead of everyone else. And that's why they're able to provide recommendations for what you ought to watch and the previews. And, you know, consumers really appreciate that. They like those services, Netflix and Amazon Prime, because the recommendations make it so much easier. So what we do is offer all those traditional media companies who were caught a little flat-footed by Netflix and Amazon, we enable those companies to get back in the game by becoming their outsourced AI. And specifically what we've done is we've developed a next generation brain that is the next step in AI, because our brain teaches itself. It does not need to be programmed by humans. The only thing that we've taught our brain is how to learn. So it subsists on a diet of video, like many humans do. And as it watches, the V-Links brain goes out to tens of thousands of online sources to find out, who is that? What is that? Where is that? What are they talking about? And what that 360-degree process delivers is something way beyond mere recognition. It's understanding. And understanding is crucial in order for AI to be truly useful to a business. You know, you have to, let's say you're CNET, you have to be able to do more than just recognize the new iPhone XR. You need to know that the phone is playing at great reviews, that the XS was not so well received, and it had some people grumbling that Tim Cook is no Steve Jobs. But also, hey, Apple has a $1 trillion market cap. You need to know that full picture, which is what a human producer of a website might know in his head, but he could not quickly find the right photos or text or video to support the story that he is banging out for CNET. The V-Link's brain knows all of that and can push out the material that's best used. So by providing context and not just recognition, V-Links helps media companies realize production cost savings on the back end. And on the front end of the user experience, we deliver immediate lift in video viewing and length of visit, because suddenly you can make video recommendations that are ultra precise, and you get auto-generated previews that our brain composes itself hands-free and then continually A/B tests to determine which previews lead to the highest number of click-throughs. And, you know, of course, the real home run is going to be the next phase, which is personalization. You know, you picture the impact that gambling is going to have on sports programming, sports media. Not only could V-Links auto-generate game highlights, but we could deliver them to precisely the fans who want them, whether that's fantasy players or gamblers who've got a lot of money riding on it. And, you know, of course, for entertainment, we've got a number of entertainment companies, big name brand ones who don't want to be identified right now. But we provide an even smarter and more insightful recommendation experience. You know, someone who knows your taste as well as your wife or your best friend does. And, you know, for media companies, being able to tailor their marketing messages so that we stop getting those sort of one-size-fits-all email blasts that say, hey, now on Netflix or new on HBO Now. There's a ton of room for growth in how OTT companies use AI. All media companies are valued almost purely on their OTT strategy now and not their traditional media metrics. That's where V-Links can come in to help. And Phil Zepeda, who we're talking to today, was our customer, and he liked the product so much that he went and joined V-Links because he was such a believer in what it was doing for NBC.
Hearing John Klein, the former president of Cable News Network, and now he presides over V-Links. It's a new company dealing with artificial intelligence and how you watch use television with it. And he's also joined by Phil Zepeda. He's the product vice president of this new venture, which started several months ago. They're both here in New York, and they're joining us this half hour live on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Five and a half hour with you, direct from Nueva York, 55 degrees at the top of the hour. A few more minutes with both of our guests. If you have a question or comment for them, get the ringing in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up in our next half hour, we'll have a reaction to what they're talking about and some other thoughts about where this TV world is going from veteran media consultant David Tice. He has a brand new book out. You ought to check it out, called The Genius Box. Also coming up, we'll have our classic trivia question of the week. And we're going to continue what we started last week, which was our first ever Tomorrow Televised survey with this fun little question. What's your favorite pricing game on The Price is Right, apart from Plinko? We know Plinko's number one, but what do you say is the favorite before that? Well, we want to hear from you, and we'll give you an update on what our audience is thinking, and we'd love to hear from you, too. So we'll tell you how you can participate in our survey a little bit later on in the program. Phil, this AI brain, how upgradable is it in terms of getting more features, more sophistication into the brain?
So part of what really makes us, I think, stand up above the rest is that the way that this brain was architected from very early on was a way that to be self-learning, and so it's not dependent on a lot of manual training that a lot of other systems have to do. And so, you know, what I mean by that is that the brain by itself can learn about new people, it can learn about new things, it can also correct mistakes. So when it, you know, because we're, the way that this is working under the hood is that when we process, when we're looking at and watching a video, we're looking at all parts of it. So we're understanding the audio via speech to text. We're looking, we're using computer vision, recognizing people, faces, places, reading OCR, Chirons, all those things, all that stuff together, and then doing an actual layer of analysis and kind of QA, if you will, on top of it, to really determine, based on all those things, what this is actually about. And so a lot of times we use we use these different senses, if you will, to make sure that we're, tagging the right things, that we're determining the right relationships between things, and making sure that the right concepts are being attributed to this video. So the brain really, it learns over time. It's built in a way to do this, which is extremely powerful. And then it also is built in a way that it can, self-heal, fix mistakes if it makes them, and that allows for a lot of flexibility. And like you said, the upgradability is really, it's really open because it's not built in a very rigid way.
Mm-hmm. It kind of upgrades itself, Simon. It sort of realizes when it's done well, it gets a cookie, so to speak, and when it doesn't, it learns from the mistake. It's kind of cool, and it never sleeps.
By the way, I want to welcome guest 1129 into our chat room. Thanks for coming aboard. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room or make the call, 646-652-2906. Now, name moments, John. I know you can't mention specific names of the clients you're working with, but when will we, as the public, see what you're doing with them? When will we be able to – are we starting to use it now? Is it coming up, let's say, before the end of the year? What's the timetable for what your clients are producing with you that we'll be able to use?
Millions of people are already using our products, even if they don't realize it. At NBC News, if you've ever been on the Today Show website or MSNBC.com, that is all powered by V-Link's AI. Those are the previews that we're generating and the video recommendations, and we're about to get into some other really cool features, all of which are driven by the meta tagging that we do. So normally a big news organization takes in hundreds of hours of video in the course of a week. And if they're lucky, they have some interns or entry-level employees tagging that video with four or five different fields of information, the date, who's talking, a headline or something like that, the lengths of the clip, and that's it. But that is such a waste for these organizations because it means there are scores and scores of other fields of data that could be entered if only you were aware of them. The shading of the light, the colors, the buildings that they're standing in front of, the transcript of what is being said, which the V-Link's brain records automatically, and by the way, can also translate. The other day, we started getting results in Turkish. We saw a translation of a transcript in Turkish, and no one had ever taught the brain Turkish. And what we realized was this was a clip from NBC News that I think it was from a refugee camp in Turkey, a Syrian refugee camp, where in the background there was some Turkish being spoken, and the brain did what it's supposed to do. It said, "What is that? Let me go figure out what that is." And it scoured the internet and realized that was Turkish and taught itself Turkish. So all of that creates a body of information that a media company like NBC can start to use to better monetize its product and to certainly more quickly turn around that product. Then there are entertainment companies that are already using it for their over-the-top products. V-Links is powering previews and recommendations and beginning to drill down deeply into the content itself so that you have a better, more fluid, friendlier, more useful experience when you go to those entertainment sites. Those are the ones that we're not allowed to identify just yet. We also have several news partners, customers who we are also not able to identify just yet. But there are millions of people who are already watching more video than they ever have, and they don't even realize why. And that's happened across the board. Everyone who deploys our AI sees a double-digit lift, often quite significant, something between 60 and 150% increase in the amount of video that is consumed just because it's presented with a little more intelligence than it had before.
The key here, I just want to add to that, as you know, as somebody that was on the other side until fairly recently, but like the key here too is that this stuff, just to be perfectly candid, is very difficult, and it's very difficult to actually do well, and it's difficult to do in a real environment. And there's a difference between, you know, having an AI team or a machine learning team and being able to do things in a controlled environment with a controlled training set and things like this, versus actually getting something that is production quality, production ready, that's going to be able to work at scale with all kinds of content coming in. And so, you know, this is something that, you know, when I was, on the customer side, working for a major broadcaster, like we had to look and decide strategically, okay, we know that we need to implement artificial intelligence because in order just to be competitive. And we had to decide whether we were going to try and do this from a blank slate and from scratch and put this together and try and do this, which might end up taking us maybe, you know, if you're lucky, maybe on the early side, a year, 2 years until you can see something that's actually fruitful, versus being able to, you know, partner with somebody, which we ultimately did, which was V-Lynx at the time. And so, you know, partner with somebody that in a matter of months, you can now have artificial intelligence integrated into your stack and into your products. So, and, you know, it sounds like a bit of a sales pitch, right? Because now I am working at V-Lynx, but the reality is that this is a decision that we had to make and that we did make. And, you know, I also think it's great if you are putting it together an internal team, because there might also be some things that are very specific to your company or your product, you know, that maybe you are best suited to work on, and that's fine. Things are not mutually exclusive. But the reason why so many, you know, major publishers are partnering with us, I think, is because they see that this is the quickest way and most cost-efficient way to actually introduce artificial intelligence, get to market quickly, and actually start making an impact on their products.
If you want to know more about this new company that deals with artificial intelligence and how you're watching news television, here's where you go online, www.blynx.com. It's www.blynx.com. John Klein, Bill Cepeda, thank you both very much for coming on. Congratulations on launching this new company, and I'm sure that we are going to hear a lot more about it as this artificial intelligence-powered world of television keeps growing and going. Thank you both for coming on. All the very best to both of you.
Simon, thanks so much for having us.
You're welcome, John. Bill, take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
John Klein, Bill Cepeda, joining us live from New York. When we come back, veteran media consultant David Tice, the author of the brand-new book, The Good Genius Box. We'll find out from him what he thinks about this new smart TV and artificial intelligence world. We'll do that after pause briefly for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio and www.spreaker.com. More than 30 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for this talk. Check it out with Melinda Corsino tonight, 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific, right here exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome back for the second half of Tomorrow We Televise on this Monday afternoon. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. And now joined live from New Jersey, the popular media consultant David Tice, author of the brand new book, The Genius Box. David, welcome in.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me on today.
It's a pleasure. So what do you make of this new world of smart TV sets, devices with artificial intelligence powered up?
Well, it's certainly a change in making the evolution of the TV set even more interesting. The gentlemen you had on before were definitely had some good points to make, and I think there's definitely a couple of different ways to look at it. One is from the control point of view, where it's you're using it just to control your TV set, like you said, through voice control or that sort of thing. And then there's sort of the business side the business side where it can that their firm is involved with, which is helping figure out what people want to watch and serving that up better and trying to stay ahead of the competition by using that artificial intelligence.
And by the way, if you want to get a hold of David, ask him a question or comment, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonAckland04 by name. It's at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. We have guests 1016 and 1029 already in the room. David, before we get into your new book and what it says, I'm curious what you think about the kind of television we are now getting and where it's going, perhaps with AI involved, the ability for us to talk back to our television set and maybe choose which way a television program goes, maybe even get the plot line, the characters, before the show begins, and we sort of mix it up and match it up the way we want, or to order a product while the show is on the air, whether it's a vacation or an Uber ride.
Yeah, I think those are all things that have, you know, when you've been in the business as long as I have, and I guess probably as long as you've been covering it, you know, you see a lot of these ideas go around and come around a couple of times. You know, there's always been this effort to try and get people more engaged and involved in the programming, you know, with, of course, the thought is they're more engaged, they're probably going to be more likely to watch your advertising or buy your product and that sort of thing. I'm not always sure that the viewer themselves are as interested in that as the business side of the, you know, the of television is. You know, I think, you know, before, you know, the other gentlemen were talking about, you know, trying to reach out to newer viewers and, or younger viewers and trying to make them more interested. And, you know, I think there is some, a niche for, you know, having interactive programs where you choose the characters or you choose the ending, but I don't really see it as being a major force, if only for the fact that, you know, how many versions of a TV episode would you have to film to be able to figure out, you know, have people choose at a particular time in the program what the ending is going to be. You know, and the other side, you know, you were talking about having people order products. You know, again, that's something that's, you know, sort of been the holy grail that's never quite been reached over the years. I think it's just, you know, people just aren't necessarily that primed to click on a button and buy something. You know, perhaps they'd be willing to click on a button and get a brochure, but I don't think the, you know, the sort of rudimentary interactivity that we've had in various levels on cable sets or, you know, on the earlier smart TV products, you know, I don't think they've particularly blown the doors away on anybody. So I think it's, I'm not throwing the ideas out the window, but I think it's still probably very early days for either of those.
It still seems though, David, that some big companies are making bets that we are going to become a very interactive, you know, lean-forward television society. I mentioned the Netflix experimentation with interactive choose-your-own-adventure programming and the fact that the possibility they may do a whole line of these shows. The Walmart investment with Echo, with Samsung, MGM venture capitalists are involved with. There's also Orbital Redux, the live science fiction series that Legendary is doing on its Alpha website, which is a whole side of interactive program that may also become a television feature. I was also intrigued when Jennifer Salke, the new head of Amazon Studios, spoke here in New York last Tuesday at the Fast Company Innovation Festival, the 97th GY. I was in the front row. And one, I think the most important thing that she said was that she would like to have her division have more synergy with other aspects of Amazon, use authors that have their books sold through Amazon, have authors that are doing their audiobooks through Audible.com. Point of disclosure, that's our sponsor. Perhaps do other things, have merchandising, maybe through Alexa, maybe through Amazon's own capabilities, where they can do a television show. In fact, there's one being a scripted show with Blake Lively of Gossip Girls fame that will have a merchandising element. It sounds like people are starting to make bets that interactivity may finally, at long last. I remember that, you know, I've said before, this has been a theory for decades. We've had fits and starts. But it seems to be a lot more activity based on the premise that finally, it's going to go?
Well, I think we're getting to the point where the technology is finally catching up with the concept. And I don't disagree with, you know, any of those things that you were mentioning. I think my issue is I don't know how involved people are going to want to be with the exact program. Regardless of what people say, I still think TV for most people is going to be lean back for the near future. But I think there's definitely ways to be able to, if you're not connecting with the people at the time they're watching, if they're watching on connected TV, you know, there is the ability to, you know, link what they've watched, or link them and, you know, their TV device and what they watched with their other devices. And, you know, if they did watch a program and saw something they liked, saw a dress on the actress they liked, you know, perhaps you serve something to them the next day on their other digital devices that said, hey, did you watch, you know, we know you watched this yesterday. Did you like, you know, any of these particular clothes that were included or something like that? So I think in that sense, the technology is finally catching up with things. I think that's, you know, a good way to, you know, continue to monetize things. The Amazon situation, you know, you mentioned Saku talk last week. I mean, in my book, I sort of position Amazon as being maybe the best position for the future. I mean, Netflix obviously is the king of the hill at the moment. But if Netflix sticks with, you know, just having one stream of revenue being subscriptions, but you have somebody like Amazon who could, like you said, you know, leverage a number of different streams and also connections within the company in terms of content, you know, I think, you know, it serves them pretty well into the future.
In your book, The Genius Boss, what do you say about Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, as well as all of these players that are going to come on the scene next year? Walmart, Apple, WarnerMedia, Disney, as well as a bunch of players who are now on the scene who started last year, like Reverie and AfroLife.tv, like PassionFlix, BizVersity, and others that are using smart sets and devices as their main way to reach viewers or their exclusive way to reach us?
Well, obviously, you know, they're a huge part of the TV ecosystem now. And one of the things, I sort of wrote the book, so it would be of interest to, you know, the casual observer as well as those of us who know a lot about, the television business. Yeah, and one of the things I do point out is that aside from the big three SVOD services, you know, there's something like 200 other of these smaller services out there that are, you know, subscription-based, and then, you know, many more that are, you know, advertising-supported. So, and they're taking up more and more time of that people are watching, and they're offering what people want to watch. I mean, there's, you know, one of the points in the book is that, you know, we go from, you know, you went from the 50s, 60s, and early 70s, I guess, right? You had a TV set, and that's what you watched. And then, you know, in the intervening years of 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, 2000s, people accumulated all these boxes they connected to their TV sets to be able to watch what they wanted to watch when they wanted to watch, whether it was a VCR way back when or a DVD player or a streaming media box now. But now if you have a smart TV set and you have an internet connection and you've got a big enough, you know, wallet, you can subscribe to just about anything that can give you all the content you would want. The flip side to that, the negative side is, and this is where the AI can come in a little bit that we were talking about earlier, is, you know, how do you discover that content and manage that content? How do you know what's out there that you want to watch when you're faced with all these different options to try to view and you know, none of them, well, all of them, you know, all of them are on different platforms. And few of them talk to each other, so it's kind of hard to, you know, place and find out what's on and when you can start streaming it and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And what's the conclusion? Is the conclusion that this plentiful era of television, when it comes to original programming, both script and script, is going to last? Are we going to see a lot more players? Are we going to see some reduction for whatever the reason, that only a few giants are left? Or do you see a very plentiful atmosphere where players big and small can succeed?
I think we're going to – I mean, my guess right now is we're going to end up with a few very large players. And, you know, we've seen the evidence of that from, you know, the Disney-Fox merger and AT&T and Time Warner and Discovery and Scripps. You know, that, you know, these behemoths that are going to be able to create the huge amount of content to compete with somebody like Netflix. And then I think we'll have a bunch of smaller niche services and, you know, that are going to serve a particular interest, whether, you know, it's programming from a particular country to interest, you know, people, you know, who have an interest in that, or maybe it's classic TV shows or something else. But I think it's people in the middle who don't have a very strong brand or very, you know, very, you know, robust offering or in something that's not very exclusive. I think those are the kind of services that aren't going to be able to survive very long, you know, in the future. You know, one of the things I say is, you know, we've seen, you know, particularly in the case like of Viacom, you know, where they had a couple of dozen different networks, right, that they've used to fill up the supermarket shelf, as it would, as you might put it, you know, on your cable guide. You know, they last year decided there's six brands are going to care about, and the other, you know, dozen or more brand TV network brands that they have are all, you know, sort of just going to have to survive on what they can, and they're not going to get much investment going in the future. So it's going to take a, you know, a strong brand and strong content, I think, to survive in, you know, in this peak TV world.
You're hearing David Tice. He is a very popular media consultant. He has a brand new book out you should check out called The Genius Box. We'll tell you how shortly. David joins us live from New Jersey this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from the Big Apple, 55 degrees at the top of the hour this Monday afternoon. Happy to have you aboard at the start of the week. We're here Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, sometimes on Wednesdays too. Simulcasting for you on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and also present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And coming up, by the way, before the hour is up, we'll have our classic trivia question of the week. We can win some prizes if you're first with the correct answer. And we have a survey that we're doing as well that somehow deals with our classic question as well. Coming up on Friday's show, we will have one of the executive producers behind the brand new Mickey's 90th Spectacular coming next Sunday night on ABC, Charlie Haykel. Also, we'll have the three folks who are guiding six couples through their paces in the brand new Bravo series, Buying It Blind. These six couples are going to buy a house without setting foot in it first. How are they going to do it? Well, we'll find out from those three people who are guiding them through the deal. And then, the first ever New York City Television Festival, not to be confused with the New York TV Festival that was held over the summer, it will be starting up this Friday and Saturday at the Dolby Theater over on 655th Street. We'll have the key organizer, Roberto Rizzo, joining us live a few hours before it gets underway. That's all Friday, 3 p.m. New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. David, in the last year, we have seen a number of new companies spring up that have this idea of using blockchain and cryptocurrency for end-to-end platforms, a la Netflix, where a content creator of a television series, a made-for-TV movie, a film, music, whatever, can create and finance what they want to do and then distribute it without an outside player. It looks like in a week or two we're about to get the first one of these. Blossom TV from Live to Your Depth, whose head was on our show earlier this year. It's out of England. There's one called Singular DTV, which is doing something called Ethervision. There are a number of others that have sprung up all over the United States. and around the world. What do you think of this process, and do you think it matters too much?
I'm no expert on blockchain, but you know, it seems to be the buzzword at the moment. And it seems it does have, you know, good applications for something like this, where you need to be able to track ownership of something and where it's played and that sort of thing. So I think there's a place for, you know, these new companies that are going to experiment with it. And I also know it's starting to be, people are started talking about it being used also on the advertising side to help with, mark clearances and, you know, when commercials are shown and tracking that sort of thing. So again, like I said, I'm not a huge expert, but it does seem to have an application here in TV for at least both those types of things.
Above all else, David, particularly after writing this book, are you more optimistic about where TV's headed, about TV's future, less optimistic, about the same? What's your overall take?
Well, I'm very optimistic about TV. I mean, one of the reasons, I wrote the book was, I'd seen the sort of change in the last few years where, you know, for as ridiculous as it might sound, you know, TV was sort of the forgotten screen, right? People were talking about, you know, digital advertising on phones, on the computers, on tablets, so forth and so on. But, you know, it was really, advertising on TV was somehow retrograde or things like that. Even though, you know, most viewing is by far still on a TV set. And now with the rollout of connected TVs and, that's becoming, you know, many more sets are available. It's much easier to set up. People have, you know, more people have Wi-Fi internet networks in their homes. So it's quite easy to do. And this sort of, you know, brings the evolution of the TV set into, you know, sort of the new era, as it were. And, you know, all of a sudden, TV is a super popular screen again. Everybody's fighting over how they're going to best serve ads and come up with marketing solutions to work with television. I don't see television as being some people sort of see it as static and in a box. You know, it's been declared dead several times, in the 25 years I've been in the business. But I don't think it's not dying. It's just, you know, evolving to its next, you know, its next iteration. 20 years from now, it might be a thin piece of Mylar that, you know, hangs on your wall. You know, it may not look like a TV we have now, just like our TVs don't look like what our parents watched in the 50s. But, you know, people, regardless, are going to be sitting on their couch, I think, watching something called a television, and I think it's still going to be very popular.
The name of the book is The Genius Box, and if you want more details about how you can get it, here's where you go, TifeVision.com. That's TifeVision.com, available on the web, and check out the site. It's a really terrific site, and if you haven't checked out The Genius Box yet, I think you'll find it very fascinating reading and a good barometer of where this medium may be headed. David Tice, thank you again for joining us. It's been a pleasure. We've got to have you back soon. It's been a delight to hear you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it.
You're welcome. Pleasure. Take care.
Bye.
David Tice, author of The Genius Box, joining us live from New Jersey. Remember, Audible.com is always available 24/7 for you to check out over 1,800 titles to choose from, and you can get one of those titles for you, like Crazy Rich Asians by the wonderful author Kevin Kwan. All you got to do is go to audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised, available 24/7. You get one free audiobook, 1 month trial of the service, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. We're going to offer it again for a second week in a row, and it's this. How many different pricing games have been played on The Price is Right on CBS? how many different pricing games have been played on The Price is Right in its 47-year history, weekdays on CBS. If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you first get the correct answer, you will win the Letter Milk CD, new season number 2. Currently playing on Audience Network. Also, the Cesar Millan CD, Love My Pitbull from Nat Geo Wild, and the John Edwards 6-CD set, Developing Your Own Psychic Powers. So once again, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's how you email your answer. If you just missed the question, post it tomorrow morning on Facebook and on my Twitter handle at UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. In the meantime, why not participate in our new Smart Retail Guys first ever survey? And the survey is this: what's your favorite Price is Right pricing game apart from Plinko? We know everybody loves Plinko. It's numero uno along up and down the line. But what about number 2? Well, what is your favorite Price is Right pricing game apart from Plinko? So far, among the people we've talked to, it seems like Cliffhangers is their game of choice. But we want to hear from you. So email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. You know, find me on Facebook. I post a thing about the survey every day. You can put it in the comment section below. We'll tabulate the score. And you can also put it on Twitter as well. And next Monday, we'll give you the results of what people think is their favorite Price Right pricing game apart from Plinko. By the way, I also want to say quickly that we were supposed to have Joan Saltzman, the senior digital media writer for CNNNews.com here in New York, on our program, which was originally scheduled to be 90 minutes. We're going 60 today. We should let you know that, unfortunately, earlier today, Joan had a family emergency. She had to take care of that. Happy to tell you that all is good. She's well. Everybody else is well in her family. So thank goodness for that. And we are going to reschedule Joan for an episode, hopefully, next week. And you can check out Joan's work at CNetNews.com or www.news.com. Don't forget, our next episode is Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. Joining us will be from Mickey's Night Spectacular, this coming Sunday on ABC, executive producer Charlie Haeckel. Plus, we'll have three of the key people behind Buying It Blind, new series premiering in a couple of weeks on Bravo. And from the brand-new New York City Television Festival that begins Friday night at the Dolby Theater on 6th Avenue, 55th Street here in Midtown Manhattan, we will have organizer Roberto Rizzo just a few hours before the festival begins. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not to be those of Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of BTR are Alan Levy and Bob Charish. Tomorrow Will Be Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For that free audio book and 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. But Tomorrow Will Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of the day. Please keep your thoughts and prayers in mind for everybody who's impacted by the tragic shooting this weekend at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. Also, everybody still dealing with the aftermath of Hurricane Michael in the Florida Panhandle and throughout the South. We're back Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio Speaker on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to from now until then, be safe and be great. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.